Hey, this is Jesse Spector of Locked On Yankees. Just wanted to come on before Sean and Gary get going and let you know that the Yankees, if you missed the game last night, lost 14-1 to the Red Sox. They got absolutely hammered. Luis Severino gave up one in the first, three in the second, and then another one before he left. And then the nine-run sixth inning that the Red Sox had, mostly against Tommy Kahnle, but then Jason Shreve came in and gave up the grand slam to Mookie Betts. Four unearned runs for Shreve, so his ERA for the season stays at 0.00. Congratulations to him, I suppose. A small victory there. A couple other things just worth noting in the game. Aaron Judge provided the entirety of the Yankees' run output with a giant home run to dead center field off Chris Sale. Judge now up to .333 for his batting average and a .1057 OPS. So while things are going bad for the Yankees at 5-6 on the young season, and they are five games behind the Red Sox in the loss column, the Red Sox are 9-1. Judge is hitting well, and Giancarlo Stanton, after striking out his first two at-bats against Chris Sale, did have an opposite field single and followed that with a real impressive double. So that might be a sign of life for him. Gary Sanchez did go 0-for-4 as his season-long struggles continue. He's sitting at .248. That's not his average. That's Gary Sanchez's OPS. So you would think that that's going to improve. Just not sure if it's going to happen immediately because the Yankees go out and face David Price on Wednesday night at Fenway. Just a lousy overall game for the Yankees. Like I said, they're now 5-6 under .500. You're getting a lot of sky is falling kind of talk in the next 24 hours or so. But, you know, the thing about baseball, another game coming right up. Yanks-Red Sox series continues. And now I'll hand you over to Sean and Gary for today's episode of Locked On Yankees.
Yes, indeedy. This is indeed the Locked On Yankees podcast on the Locked On Sports Network. It's Sean St. Jacques. It's Gary Phillips. It's all Yankees-Red Sox on this one. Gary, we're talking about a lot about the rivalry in this episode. Later on, we'll get into, of course, the thick of it. You know, the youngsters that are coming up, the significance of the rivalry, this first series of the season between the Yankees and the Red Sox. We'll also get into how injuries have plagued now both teams. Red Sox are a little bit nicked up coming in to this series as well. And, of course, we'll talk about the great pitching matchup we're expecting tonight as well. Tanaka and Price. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, so let's start there, Sean, with Price and Tanaka, because both of these guys are off to really good starts after an up and down 2017 seasons for both of them. And I mean, what Price has done so far especially has really wowed me, because he was all over the place last season in Boston, on the field, off the field, didn't pitch like himself, got into trouble with the media, you know, seemed to be a bit of a locker room distraction. Well, in two starts so far this year, he's got 14 innings under his belt and he's yet to give up a run. He's got 10 strikeouts. He's pitching like David Price, which, you know, slotted in behind Chris Sale, who we saw last night. That's a scary thought going down the road this season.
Hey, just talk about the pitching matchups in general. Last night you had Severino against Sale. That was such a lot. That was so much fun a lot of times last year. And now tonight it's Tanaka against David Price. And like you said, David Price in two starts already this season is 1-0. He's only given up 7 hits, 10 strikeouts, as well as WHIP is at 0.71. And then you look at Tanaka on his side of things. He's thrown just over 12 innings so far. Ks per 9 are almost at 11. Two quality starts. He's 1-1, but he's also been off to a great start for the Yankees as well. 9 hits, 4 earned runs isn't great, but for the most part, Tanaka has also been off to a great start. And for him, it's all about the splitter, and he's been throwing that pretty well so far. And when that's going well, he's tough to stop.
Yeah, one of the reasons he struggled early on in the first half last year is because his splitter, among other pitches, just wasn't working. And so far, it looks really sharp. You know, there was some concern. He had a rough spring training. He looks really good. The last time he pitched against Baltimore, now he makes one mistake that ends up over the wall. The Yankees ultimately lose that game. But aside from that, he pitched a gem. And he looked good in his first outing as well. So I think there's a little bit of a chip on his shoulder with the first half of the season he had last year, the expectations, the money he's making. Now, he obviously opted in, but I don't think he was necessarily going to do better on the open market. But he's still getting a very nice salary, and I think he feels a little bit pressure to live up to that in a good way, in that he wants to perform and meet those expectations. So I think we're going to see a big year out of him.
David Price is kind of the interesting, more interesting story, I think, for me here, Gary, just from the simple fact that he was, it's well documented, getting into fights in the media with, I mean, Dennis Eckersley over, you know, ripping the team apparently on broadcasts, and he didn't take too kindly to that, and didn't seem like he was much of a fit at times in Boston last season. And then you put it on top of the fact that he was struggling a lot at times. The fact that he's getting off to a good start for the Red Sox in their camp, that's got to be huge for them, especially with a new manager in Alex Cora.
Well, success is a good way to erase memories. I think, because it wasn't just the media last year. I mean, the fans were pretty peeved with his performance, and rightfully so when you sign for the amount of money that he did in Boston. But a few good starts here at the start of the season quickly puts that to rest. You know, fans are back on the side. Last year was a little difficult to remember, but this is a guy who's a Cy Young caliber pitcher when he's at his best. And you know, it's not like he's past his prime or anything. There's no reason to believe he can't continue to be that pitcher for a few more years. I think last year was a situation of adjusting to not only Boston media, but Boston as a city, being in a major market, having the press and the fans on your case 24/7. That was nothing he had ever really had to put up with before in Tampa Bay. You know, he's spent a little bit of time in Detroit as well, but this is really, last season was really his first introduction to playing in a major market where the demand is that you win and you exceed and you get to the playoffs and you live up to your expectations. You be that ace you're supposed to be. So I think there was an adjustment period for him last year.
And the matchup with him and Tanaka is interesting also because of Tanaka's success against the Red Sox, but also his success last year at Fenway specifically. A couple number of memorable starts from him there last year, including almost going the distance, I believe, in one game where he absolutely dominated the Red Sox. I believe it was a complete game in the end at Fenway last season. He's had memorable starts against the Red Sox. He's had success against the Red Sox. David Price against the Yankees, if memory serves, pretty up and down. There's some times where he pitches really well. Other times the Yankees get to him early and make it tough. And of course, at Fenway, it really doesn't matter where these two teams play. Of course, in the next couple of years, there's going to be games in London, for God's sake. But it doesn't matter where they play. The games are always longer. The games are always more intense. It's just different when these two teams get together. And I think both of these teams are confident throwing these guys out there because of the fact that, for the most part with Price, but especially Tanaka, has had success against the opponent.
Sean, you know what I'm thinking?
What's that?
I'm thinking when the Yankees and Red Sox are in London, now, me and you should be able to do a Locked On Yankees podcast,
Jesse,
on location.
Hey, Jesse, breaking the fourth wall here. If you're hearing this podcast, which I know you are, we're interested.
We're very interested in a trip to London. So, you know, we'll do
the podcast from London.
We'll let you get back to us on that one. anyway, you know, just to follow up on the points you made, you know, you talk about Price's history against the Yankees. He's got a 4.53 career ERA against New York. A lot of that goes back to his Tampa Bay days. I don't put too much stock into, you know, splits versus certain teams because teams change every year, especially look at how many new faces the Yankees have. But it does seem like he struggles against New York. So we'll see if that continues. The Yankees are going to get their first crack at him of the year tonight. And kind of the opposite with Tanaka, like you're saying, with the Red Sox. You know, he's got, I'm looking at it right here, he's got a 3.65 ERA against the Red Sox. Not the greatest, not the worst. You know, he has a tendency, as we saw last year in the postseason, he steps up when it's a big game. And I think a lot of that goes back to his experiences in Japan, you know, pitching on the equivalent of the NCAA tournament stage in Japan in Japanese high school baseball. He pitched in their version of the World Series. He had an excellent postseason. He steps up when the going gets tough.
No question about that. And he's had some memorable performances against the Red Sox in the past, like you mentioned. And it kind of leads me into how I want to finish this segment out, which is newcomers a little bit in the rivalry, but also, of course, Aaron Boone and Alex Cora managing in their first series to, as in a Yankee Red Sox. It's different, I guess you could say, from playing than it is managing. It'll be interesting to see how they make their adjustments. It's the first Yankee-Red Sox series, of course, for Giancarlo Stanton as well. Newcomers all around, but also those two guys on the mound, ton of experience. That compare and contrast. And when you really think about it, that's just a normal Yankee Red Sox. It just happens like that. Seems like every series, it's just the storylines are abound. It doesn't matter. And in this case, you've got two guys who are so used to pitching in the rivalry, and then they're going to be pitching against a lot of guys and being managed by guys that this is their first experience in this series.
You think Red Sox fans remember Aaron Boone?
Yeah, I don't know. No, they do. Yeah.
I think they might.
His middle name begins with F for
right,
a reason.
Right, we're gonna
abstain from that.
Right, well, that's gonna be a really interesting matchup. Him and Cora.
100%.
That we're not gonna get a real good sense of after just one game or one series. It's something that's gonna kind of play out and develop over the course of the year. But two neophytes in the dugout at the top of the step. That's gonna be fun. I think add a little spice to this rivalry.
Yeah, 100%. And I think it'll also be interesting to see how they, you know, deal with the pressure themselves. Obviously, they've played in the rivalry in the past, but it's a different ballgame having to step back and kind of have to be there and make those different moves from the dugout. I think early on, you know, it's tough to tell. I mean, it's 10 games for Aaron Boone as Yankee manager, it's nine to ten games for Alex Cora as manager of the Red Sox. But any time that the microscope's put on this rivalry, I mean, all of the decisions are going to be magnified.
Right, yeah. You know, the Yankees are kind of off to a rough start. The Red Sox are off to a very hot start, naturally. Fans in New York are going, this guy, Boone, what's he doing? Doesn't have a clue. You know, why'd they get rid of Girardi? Blah, 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 blah. Now, we've been listening for 10 years, Yankees fans calling into drive time radio saying Girardi and Cashman got to go. Meanwhile, in Boston, Red Sox are doing very fine to start the season. Alex Cora drawing a lot of praise. These aren't the types of things we figure out after a week and a half, 2 weeks, people. Let's see how the season plays out. Let's see how both men do in their new roles, and I think the Yankees and Red Sox are both ultimately in good hands.
All right, Gary, let's move on now. Let's get into the injuries for both teams, and it's going to be interesting to see how this affects the series. We'll start with the Red Sox, because that seems to be, at least based on the specific person who's injured, the most important, obviously, in the series. Xander Bogaerts, who's been as hot as anybody heading into this series, gets hurt in the Tampa Bay series going after a errant throw going towards the opponent dugout. He had to slide in the dugout to try to keep the ball in play to save a run.
An errant flip that he tossed to nobody. He thought somebody was at third base with a runner coming, and he flipped the ball to no one. And it's a shame that he got hurt the way he did, kind of slide into the dugout, because, obviously the mistake was his own, but he's hustling after the ball. He's trying to prevent a run in the game, trying to keep his team in it, and he slides into the dugout and hurts his ankle, and now he's out for a week or so. So it's a shame for it to happen like that.
But we were looking at the stats, and he's leading every offensive category besides on-base percentage for the Red Sox.
The Yankees are lucky because he was absolutely scorching to start the season. I mean, very few people in baseball outside of, Bryce Harper and Didi Gregorius were swinging hotter bats. So far this season, Bogaerts batting .368. He's got a .400 OBP, .711 slugging percentage, two dingers and 9 RBIs to start the season. He leads the lead with 7 doubles. Yeah, the guy was off to a pretty good start, I'd say.
It's going to be interesting to see who steps up for the Red Sox. And then we know the laundry list of injuries for the Yankees. Gary Sanchez did DH in the game last night, so it's good to see at least he got back into the lineup for New York. But, of course, we know Aaron Hicks still trying to get off the DL. Hopefully he will be back very soon for the Yankees. And then you also look at the likes of Brandon Drury on the DL as well. Other guys have been nicked up. I mean, McKinney comes up and he gets on the DL. So it's going to be interesting how Aaron Boone manages those injuries as well. And now the outfield is a little bit less depth there than the Yankees would like.
Yeah, I mean, I got the complete list right here. We got Ben Heller, Billy McKinney, Greg Bird, Brandon Drury, Clint Frazier, Aaron Hicks, Jacoby Ellsbury, and CC Sabathia. That is not how the Yankees...
Not ideal.
Imagine. It's not what you want,
not
Sean.
Not what you want, no.
But you know what?
That is baseball, Susan.
You look at what happened last year. A few guys were injured to start the season, namely Didi Gregorius, Gary Sanchez. There were a few more injuries throughout the year. Starlin Castro, CC among them. Team ended up being just fine. So it's better that they go through some aches and pains now than later on in the season. Of course, just because guys are hurt now doesn't guarantee that that won't happen later on or again or repeatedly. But it's better to have it happen now than later at the end of the season as you're trying to make a run or you got important games coming up or the postseason's coming up.
For me, though, when you think of who has to step up, and this is the good news for the Yankees, is the young crop is here, and the younger guys are going to get some of them their first major taste of Yankees Red Sox baseball. Of course, Miguel Andujar, Tyler Wade, with Brandon Drury out, Tyler Wade's going to be very versatile, obviously, in the infield. Maybe Tyler Austin gets some looks as well. They brought up Jace Peterson. Ronald Torres is very versatile. You can put him in a number of different positions as well, possibly. And then, of course, the big one, arguably, that Gary Sanchez is DHing. Austin Romine is going to be crucial in this series until Gary Sanchez comes back. Now, it could be very soon. Could be tomorrow. Who knows? But for now, Austin Romine's got to manage the rotation.
Yeah, and he's done a really nice job. He's always done a nice job behind the plate. Yeah. He's always been well-regarded by his pitchers, but he's swinging a really hot bat. And I think we talked about this a little bit last week, but for those that have noticed, he's changed his stance since last season. He's a little more... He's stepping towards the ball now as far as where his legs start off. He's opened toward the plate, toward the Yankees dugout. And I was talking to him a little bit about this, and Romine explained to me, you know, he figures when Sanchez is healthy, he's only going to get in the lineup every so often. So he wants to make more contact, do himself some more favors at the plate, do a little more for the Yankees at the plate, and hopefully make more contact. So what he's done is he's shortened his swing a little bit. He's created a more direct path to the ball, and really his goal was just make it easier to square up and put the bat on the ball, and it worked beautifully in spring training. It's working beautifully now. You saw him have a big day the other day, and the Yankees don't seem to be, you know, he used to be an easy out when he was in the lineup, and that's not the case early on so far. So that's huge for New York when he got him coming off the bench.
I mean, you look at that game against the Orioles where he almost single-handedly carried them to that win. They end up losing the game in extra innings, of course.
Not his fault.
But Austin Romine, any time the game was looking for a big hit, he delivered. And that kind of shows you where he's at. He had a three-hit game that night, or that afternoon, I should say, at the stadium. But he's really just come on these last couple games when he's been in the lineup. Of course, Sanchez hasn't played since that other extra inning game where he caught almost 14 innings and just couldn't keep going.
Brutal.
So,
that's
yeah,
catcher.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know what else? I want to just walk back a little bit because we were talking about the injuries. You know what just blows my mind is the whole Brandon Drury situation.
100%.
Because, you know, for those that are not familiar, he said he was having serious migraines. They were blurring his vision. He couldn't always see. And the craziest part is that this is something he's been battling for his entire career. His previous team, the Diamondbacks, had no idea. The Yankees had no idea when they traded for him, and basically Drury just, you know, admits something's wrong here. I can't see what's going on the field when I'm at bat or I'm at third base, and he tells Brian Cashman, and he tells the Yankees. That's insane to, like, not, like, just playing Major League Baseball, playing the game at that level. You know, you've got baseballs with 100 plus mile per hour exit velocity coming at you at the hot corner. You've got a pitcher on the mound throwing in the high 90s, you know, like every other guy throwing high 90s, 100 miles per hour. It's coming at you, and you're not entirely sure you're going to be able to see the pitch or the play. That's just wild to me. He's incredibly lucky that he's never gotten hurt before.
The other mind-boggling thing to me, Gary, is the fact that the way that I remember the story being told to me was that he just said, I'm just going to play through it. You know, I'm not going to worry about it. Like, he kind of took an old school approach. I'm going to play through it. And now all of a sudden, is this bothering? Oh, yeah, it actually is a really big problem. Like, how could it have taken this long? You know, that's just one of those things
That's what I'm saying. Between just speaking up and realizing, for your own well-being, this is something I need to address with my team. Between that and just,
and still producing.
But something not going wrong, taking a line drive to your chest or a pitch to the head. It's just amazing that he's been able to keep it hidden for so long. But it also makes you wonder, what if it's something really, really simple, like he needs contacts or he needs glasses, and something he's been battling through for how long has he been in the league now, or how long has he been a professional now, 6 years or so? Like, what if it was just a really easy fix, and now it's turned into this whole ordeal where, you're out, you're missing time, you're putting yourself at risk, you hurt your team, you're missing games, you lied to your team, essentially, two teams now. It's just...
Or at least didn't mention anything.
Right, well, there's bliss in ignorance.
Neither here nor there, but he's still putting up numbers, we'll keep him in the lineup.
It's just wild to me that he's opted to just make no big deal of this over the last few years. But, yeah, that was something that really, among all these injuries that the Yankees are dealing with, that to me was the craziest.
And it's very much an old-school way of him to deal with that situation. I mean, nowadays, you see it in all sports, the smallest sign of a concussion or a head injury, with Billy McKinney, he tried to play through it, and immediately Aaron Boone looked at him out there and just said, no, you're coming out. This is it. We're pulling the plug. Now, obviously, Brendan Drury never showed those inklings. At least we didn't think he did in Arizona. But the mind-boggling part for me is basically like it just came up in conversation. He's like, I kind of have been dealing with this my whole career. And Brian Cashman's got to be thinking, wait a minute, what? What are you talking about?
Well, you talk about, the play through it mentality. And, me personally, I have a few plays or maybe a game where it's like, I can't really see the ball. Or, I've got a migraine. It's like, all right.
Maybe that's why I'm not playing well.
I'm having an off day, get me some Advil, get me some Excedrin, whatever, and I'll continue to play through it. If a week's gone by and this continues to be an issue, well, yeah, then I've got to go see a doctor or talk to somebody. He's been doing this since 2010, and that's just his professional career.
All right, Gary, let's wrap it up with really diving into the almost new era of the Yankee-Red Sox rivalry. Everyone thought it kind of arrived last year, although, this time last year, nobody thought the Yankees were going to be on par with the Red Sox. Last year was supposed to be kind of the Red Sox year. The Yankees surprised. Boston still made the playoffs and won the division. But now, it's been all of the hype that we expected going into a Yankees-Red Sox series. And, of course, heading into Game 2 tonight, it's, the juice is back, I think you could say, more than it has been in recent years.
It's not loose, though.
Aaron Boone, obviously, first time he's been in the Yankee pinstripes, or at least the Yankee uniform, going up against Boston since that fateful night in October of 2003. Yankee fans remember well. It's the young studs from both sides. It's the Judges and the DDs and the Gary Sanchez's. It's the Betts, the Benintendi's, the Bradley Juniors. It just seems like it's just like the old days, it seems like, heading into a big Yankee-Red Sox three-game set up at Fenway. It just has the same kind of, at least hype, as it's had in the past.
Well, yeah, everybody talks about the Yankees and the Astros and how that's going to be a rivalry over the next few years because both teams are so young, and obviously they squared off last year in the playoffs. But, the Red Sox are right there. They've got all this youth as well, and I don't think it gets the same attention as the Yankees youth movement got last year, because the Yankees kind of brought all these guys up in, you know, a few month, 1 year span. The Red Sox have been kind of plucking guys from the minors here and there for the last 3-4 years now. But I mean, just the outfield alone, Benintendi, Bradley Jr., Betts, I mean, those are guys that are going to be icons in Boston for a long time. The same goes for Rafael Devers at short, and pitching, you got Eddie Rodriguez. They've got a lot of youth as well, and it's going to be really cool to see all these guys grow up with each other, grow up against each other, and yeah, kind of re-spark a rivalry that's been plagued by veterans and some mediocre teams and familiar faces that had gone stale. So yeah, there's a lot of new blood. And then, like you said, I think Boone, we talked about that earlier, Boone definitely adds a little bit of a spark to it as well, given his history in New York.
And you also just think of the fact that, you know, in years past, of course, there's still been great games, even when one team's been bad or one team's been out of the playoff race or the other. But there's just nothing like it when both teams have great young cores. They both have veteran guys as well on the offensive side, but they also have two really good pitching staffs going up against each other as well. It's back to the days where you're plucking the big time names and you've got the core guys that grew up in your organization. And like you said, they're going to grow up in the rivalry together. And the more familiar they get with each other, the better the rivalry tends to get when these two get together.
Yeah, I think starting this year especially, it's going to be a lot of fun. I think when it's all said and done, both of these teams will be in the postseason. Who's first place in the AL East? Who's the wild card? I don't necessarily know that it matters once you get to October. You know, I think they're going to be neck and neck for a long time. I think they're going to be really competitive, even ball clubs. I think they are right now. I would say you probably give the advantage as far as, you know, the offense goes to the Yankees. I think their pitching staffs are their rotations are pretty equal. I think New York has a better bullpen, but you know, like, it's you're being nitpicky.
Yeah,
there's really not a huge separation between the two teams, and I think this season it's going to make for a lot of fun, and it's going to make for a lot of fun for years to come.
I think the other thing you can argue is, you know, certainly I think Boston has the best starting pitcher in Chris Sale. He's arguably,
by far.
And then you look at Severino, probably second in that category. But just the fact that the competitive balance just seems to be back again. I mean, there were some years where, I mean, it was the Yankees making the playoffs and the Red Sox holding on for dear life for a playoff spot. Then it was the Yankees for a few years not making the playoffs. The Red Sox did, but they never really got too far in the postseason. And now it's kind of gotten back to last year. Both teams made the playoffs. The Yankees made a deep run. Boston couldn't get past Houston, although the Yankees didn't either, but it was in the ALCS. But now, from the get-go, like last year kind of developed later on in the season,
right.
From the get-go now, it's go time when these two teams get together. It just, I just get excited because it reminds me of 09. It reminds me of the early 2000s again. It reminds me of the times where Yankees-Red Sox was must-watch TV every single time they got together. And starting with this three-game set, it's back to those kind of days again.
Well, what was fun over the offseason was kind of this demand that they match each other move for move. You know, the Yankees make this huge splash with Giancarlo Stanton, and immediately, you know, Red Sox Twitter, the Red Sox beat, everybody's, you know, go get J.D. Martinez. Get J.D. Martinez.
Exactly.
Go get J.D. Martinez. And they kept saying that to themselves for an entire winter, and eventually it was spring, and nobody really wanted to sign one of the best hitters on the open market.
What's that arms race again?
But the Red Sox finally did. The messages were a little bit delayed in getting to the ownership and management, but, like, that was, you know, I don't want to say that the Red Sox got J.D. Martinez because the Yankees got Giancarlo Stanton. I think Boston was going to have perfectly fine offense regardless, but you know, do I think it played a little bit of a factor? Yeah, and that's kind of their response. So I think it's cool that we're at a point where the teams are trying to match each other and one-up each other, not just on the field, but off of it as well, and I think that'll make for some more fun come the trade deadline.
All right, Gary, to finish it up, I got a Tim Wakefield knuckleball for it. I need you to channel your Aaron Boone here, all right? I need you to give me Yankee Red Sox rivalry moment that sticks out to you.
To me, my favorite? You know, for me, my favorite is the Jeter dive play. Because 2004 was like the first season I really intricately paid attention to baseball. And how old was I at that point? You know, off the top of my head.
Nine?
Yeah, I get right. At that point, I'm 23 now. I'll let you guys tweet at me. You let me know. Math is not my best subject.
We did not go to college for that.
Right. There's a reason why I'm writing and why Sean and I are talking into microphones. Yeah, math is not our strong suit.
No.
But anyway, yeah, I'm a little kid at that point. You know, I obviously grew up as a Yankees fan, and I remember that being, you know, they went to extra innings that night. Obviously, that's when the dive happened. And I remember that being like one of the first times my parents let me stay up and watch a baseball game, you know, at school the next morning. And so, yeah, I remember the Jeter dive play as kind of my introduction to Yankees Red Sox.
It's definitely one of my favorites as well. Everyone's going to say the Aaron Boone moment, I would say. There's a game for me that I remember back, I think it was in 2009, the 15-inning game at the stadium. Ooh. Both rotations just were spent. Both bullpens were spent. It was an exhausting game for both teams. It was just begging for a hero. And it was kind of the first time that season where Alex Rodriguez finally delivered in a big spot in a Yankee Red Sox game. And he hit the walk-off home run off Tenichi Tozawa, who's now a Miami Marlin. How about that? Hit a two-run shot off of him, bottom of the 15th, and I just remember sitting on my couch about to fall asleep. Seriously, about to fall asleep watching the game. I was done mentally and physically. I couldn't imagine how the players were feeling. And then A-Rod finally sent everybody home.
Yeah. I love also seeing the highlights, you know, from like the 70s and the 80s, and you got Carlton Fisk and Thurman Munson trying to beat each other up, and Greg Nettles putting people in headlocks. You know, it was a different time back then. But anyway, you know, you guys should definitely share your favorite Yankees Red Sox moments with us. You can tweet at us. You can tweet at Locked On Yankees. You can tweet Sean and myself as well at Gary H. Phillips at S. St. J. 7.
Nailed it.
Yeah, I've got it down.
On top.
I've got it memorized. But yeah, let us know what your favorite moments are. We always love to hear from you guys, and of course, be sure to always follow our work, what Sean and I are doing for Jets Wire and Sporting News and Flagrantly Foul and wherever else we've got our toes dipped these days.
Yeah, seriously.
And thank you all for listening, and please give us say nice things about us on iTunes, as always.
Yeah, do that. Find the Locked On Yankees podcast where podcasts are found, and enjoy the Yankees-Red Sox rivalry. It's back, and we'll see you guys next time.